Good morning. Good morning, gypsy friends. How are you doing? You feeling springtime love? Good morning to the traveling salespeople selling toilet paper in the jungles of your dreams. Good morning. It is Sunday, April the 13th, 2025, Bo Blimp Doc. My throat's a little bit scratchy-scriffy. It's because of the pollen, right? It's not the shit they're spraying. It's all the life out there. It's not that weird-ass, grayed-out bullshit sky. Look at the flower. It's still living. Look at the birdie. It's still singing. Look at that bug. I've never seen it before. It's feeding on a dead person's body that used to be a whore. Because it is April the 13th. It is Sunday. Oh, Dan, you're in the devil's magic. And it's just about 8:44 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula, not far from where so many things have happened. So many things have been done. Not for good, not for fun, not for joy, but by a ghost named Roy. He carries a machete. He walks up and down the road late at night if you see him. Keep driving, buddy. He has a woman in white. She's just up the road, too. She needs a ride to the church. Don't stop, buddy. There's news out of Gumpton, Texas. Not far from Grinkentown or Frisketville. Not far from that Mexican border that now has a wall 1,700 feet tall, made of concrete and rebar and pain and suffering, with machine guns and rockets and time-activated neutron weapons. Not far from there, in Gumpton, Texas, there's a white Texas movement situation brewing. There's news out of Gumpton that the white Texas movement armies are on the outskirts of Dallas and suffering heavy losses against the Latina lesbian Bowery babes with wrestling juices and tough spirit in their whole quarries. It's a mess, a hot mess. White Texas movement armies are encircling El Paso and then moving on to Prince Machiavelli's for a lap dance. The white Texas movement is not racist, it's motivated by pog magic and wants to create various strip clubs up and down the panhandle to deliver power love white Texas cherry pie juice to the loosest deuces that like shaky cabooses. Scourge hammer warriors parading about Houston, working their way to Bankers Building to make a red ceiling, to spread the brain wax, to spread the tire sorrow. Your fist is bloody with old bitter scorn, and you were warned that when the clock turned, the white Texas proudly pog cherry pie riders would be storming up your butt crack with ancient Chinese Tabasco sauce cure. It burns like an Indian fire, fire enema. It burns real bad, and your butt rocket will burn as the toilet is covered in predisposed oppositional thinkery. The San Antonio whores are rubbing dead fish pasture and plaster on their alabaster boobulous skids, and the kids play with hand grenades down the way, and no one is concerned. because this is like El Salvador, and the ukulele rules all here. You can bet that those wenches near Corpus Christi are named Misty and Chastity, and they carry knives and take lives in the swamp. Five kinds of new style kings will arise like sand crabs from the dabbing dens in Lubbock. Forge masters, carrying tools and trannies, merging with angel dust nuns to make street babies and puddle flower children. The city burns as the rats are devoured by the awa. You hear more victories, more achievements unlocked by the White Texas movement. As inchoate and incomprehensible and undefined as it is in terms of pogs and strippers and whatnot, many of the rappers and the hip-hop kings from Abilene joined the White Texas movement, and some became lords of Bo Blimpdock and ruled with glowing fists. If your eyes could see this madness unfolding, would you whisper to your cat, "Fuck off"? Would you? Pog? White Texas pride machines are churning out luggage oil 24/7 now, and the sheets at the Motel 6 don't get cleaned often enough and at the right temperature, and that's a crusty. Then just add water, baby, and hope for the best luggage queen. White Texas pride machine. Yeah, that's where my mind is today. There's so much absurd bullshit going on, so why don't we just make up our own bullshit? That's where I'm at. So this isn't a real thing, and it's not even really about much. Perhaps they hate Danish people, but who the fuck doesn't hate the Danes at this point, really? Next topic, right, Dan? Now that we've uncovered the truth about the White Texas movement, I've got a new t-shirt for sale. On the front of it, it says, "Say something nice in Danish." You can figure out what it is. I'm sure you could use Google Translate, and then you'll understand that this kind of t-shirt is the t-shirt you wear when you visit Copenhagen for Christmas. You put this thing on, and you just walk around town. It's the perfect t-shirt for that kind of bullshit. I like the maroon. I think the forest green is good too, but that's up to you, buddy. Here's an article from The Guardian, and it was published on the 25th of March, 2025, so about 3 weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, and it was written by Oliver Millman. Headline: U.S. honeybee deaths hit record high as scientists scramble to find main cause. Honeybee deaths have hit record highs in the U.S., with the unprecedented loss of colonies pushing many beekeepers close to ruin as scientists scramble to identify the main cause of the huge declines. Commercial beekeepers have reported losing more than 60% of their colonies, on average, over the winter, according to an ongoing Project Apis summary that covers more than two-thirds of America's managed bees. This enormous rate of decline is higher than record reductions seen last year and is on track to be the biggest loss of honeybee colonies in U.S. history, according to Scott McArt, an associate professor of entomology at Cornell University. McArt said that the extraordinary rate of loss became apparent during this winter's mass movement of honeybee hives to California to pollinate the vast almond crop there. Honeybees, although introduced to the U.S., have become vital to the agricultural system by pollinating half of all crops, including apples, berries, pumpkins, melons, and cherries. Beekeepers are increasingly struggling to maintain the bee numbers necessary to undertake this work. Something real bad's going on this year, said McArt. We've been seeing high losses year after year, but if anything, it is getting worse, which is troubling. Some places are having devastating losses, and there was a shortfall in pollination in some almond orchards this year. Whether these impacts will cascade to other crops remains to be seen. It's certainly possible. The latest honeybee losses are valued at $139 million and have come as the honey price has climbed by 5% amid a drop in honey production. Many beekeepers are now struggling to absorb these shortfalls, with some going out of business altogether. It's all gone, said one beekeeper in response to the Project APIS survey. The equity on the house is gone, our retirement is gone, the family members' money is gone, all that's left are empty boxes. We don't even have the dead bees. They're gone too. A certain portion of a colony typically perishes over their more moribund winter months, but this rate of loss was typically only around 10 or 20%, until around 2 decades ago, when a phenomenon called colony collapse disorder, where colonies completely disappear or die, started to emerge in the U.S. Now, typically, half of all colonies are lost on average. Scientists have ascertained that the climate crisis, habitat loss, and pesticide use have badly affected all bees, the vast majority in the U.S. being 4,000 native wild species rather than honeybees. For managed honeybees, a lack of nutrition, poor handling practices, and rampant infestation by varroa mites, a type of parasite and disease, have also taken their toll. The loss of bees, both captive and wild in the U.S., is already starting to limit the supply of some food crops and is reducing the yield of honey. The declines are part of a broader crisis in the insect world, where species are being wiped out at an alarming rate. Researchers warn that the loss of insects imperils basic functions of life on Earth, such as food production, the flowering of plants, and waste disposal. The latest record leap in honeybee losses is now being investigated by staff at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is analyzing bees and wax and pollen to determine if the parasites and viruses are to blame for the deaths. Okay, the rest of this is political garbage. It really is. You got to be careful with these articles because then they'll switch to, but Trump cut this and the Democrats want to do that and all the sides suck if you don't understand that at this point. But let's read an article from like 10 years ago. This article was published 10 years ago and it was written by Jareen Imam on June the 7th, 2015. Headline, Are Bees Getting Dementia? From pesticides to possible cell phone radiation, the causes of bee population decline are an ongoing debate. Now there's another thing buzzy little insect has to fear, dementia. A new study published on PLOS One says aluminum, one of the most significant environmental contaminants of recent times, could be responsible for the pollinators' decline. Aluminum, a widely known ecotoxicant, has already been linked to the elimination of entire fish species due to acid, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to stop right here. You guys can read the rest of this because I didn't even want to read the last article completely. But here's the point from a Sovietology perspective, and this is something that Dane Wigington talks about a lot, that of the many elements used in geoengineering, and it's not chemtrails, those are geoengineering trails or spray trails, they're not chemtrails, but one of the elements they use is nanoscale aluminum. It's highly reflective. It can stay up there a long, long time. It gives that sky that great outlook. You know when they say it's partially cloudy or mostly sunny? What they mean is that the rest of the sky is filled with this shit, blocking out the sun, cooling the earth temporarily. But it's also salting the earth, which means it's poisoning everything, to include the bees. It's poisoning you, it's poisoning me. The stuff they're spraying is dangerous. It's so dangerous, it's impacting our ability to reason about questions like, are they spraying shit in the sky? Yeah, that's the fucked up situation we find ourselves in, folks. The amount of shit they're spraying impacts our ability to reason about our situation, to figure out a way out. The fact that they're poisoning the earth tells us that I don't think there is an end game from their perspective, but death. at least death for most of us. And if you haven't noticed the insect thing, I don't know what to tell you. Just look at the windshields. You know, go out into the forest. If you remember a Western Washington forest, a Pacific Northwest forest, when you were a kid, that even in the wintertime, it was kind of noisy. Go out into the forest and ask yourself, does it remind you of what it once was? Something is wrong. It doesn't mean that it's because of cheeseburgers or people driving cars. As I've said before, and I'll say again, the oldest story is to blame the poor people. They always do that. At the end, it's the poor people. It's the weak people, the ones which are most of us who have no resources to speak of. So we're ideal to blame. Blame us. Toss us out of the bus. Toss us out of the boat. We're the ones who should be sacrificed. That is the oldest story. And that is the global warming, climate change story going right back to whatever, when Jim Hansen went before the U.S. House of Representatives or the Senate and talked about it in like 1988 or whatever. It goes right back to there. That these people will fly around in fancy ships and they'll do their thing to the max. And then they'll tell us it's because we're eating cheeseburgers. We can be certain that is bullshit. I don't know the full story, but I do think it's possible that what Dane Wigginton says is correct, and that one of the realities of what they've been doing is they've been making us dumber. And they probably did shift their focus from the poles, from the North Pole and the South Pole, about 20 years ago. Because that strategy, even though they had to maintain it, was failing. And so what they needed to do was maintain the lie everywhere else. And so probably up until the 1990s, probably for the most part, most of North America didn't get as much of the poison. It was probably a matter of redirecting fake-ass winter. But who knows? Who knows the truth? We won't be told it. And by the time the truth becomes obvious, it won't fucking matter. And if it's part of a deeper truth, which if you're a Christian, you would know, there's a deeper truth. I mean, I'm not a fan of Roman holidays, so I'm not really going to tell you that I think Easter is the celebration of Christ's sacrifice, but it is worth picking a time to recognize it, so why not Easter? There's a bigger story potentially here, bigger than just the honeybees dying. But if you're wondering, is something wrong that you could verify with your own logic, the answer is yes. And if you have an experience of the Pacific Northwest ecosystem, at least a reasonable experience going back 30 or 40 years, then you too can come to the realization that something's fucking wrong. It doesn't mean they're telling you the truth, and I certainly wouldn't listen to Al Gore or little Greta Thunberg. But something's wrong. Next topic. Dan, you're ruining pre-Easter, pre-Easter. Because Easter's next weekend, right? Isn't it? Like next weekend, 420? 420. That's every pothead's Easter. Isn't that also Hitler's birthday? So there's a new movement in child care and child rearing. It's coming out of, you know, the Baltic, out of that dread place, from all those Scandinavian countries huddled in their pain circle. But of the worst of them, which we all know the worst of them is Denmark, coming out of Denmark is a whole new way to raise your kids. It's called Pipeland. It's called Pipeland. It's amazing. You pay whatever money you have. You take your kid to Pipeland. The kid has to be between the ages of 3 and maybe 6. And you stick him in a pipe. And you close an iron gate behind him. And you wave goodbye. And there's food in there. There's a way out. But the kid's got to find it through the maze of culvert pipe that they crawl through. And there's rats. Because the Danes believe that will make you stronger. There's rats in the maze, but the kids could eat the rats. It's called Pipeland, and it will make your child stronger. You wave goodbye. The kid scuttles away. You go outside to the crying room because you can't be there, but the kid's gonna make it in Pipeland. At the entrance of Pipeland are written the words in Danish. Welcome to Pipeland. Your young ones might survive. The weak are food for the strong. Welcome to Pipeland. Your kid will learn to be strong and brave and true and magical goo, just like, you know. Just like Barbara Streisand said, for the principles of ethical behavior in Denmark, there is only the Jantel Law. Don't you want your kid to go to Pipeland? There's another Pipeland. They're opening up for old people. Every city is going to have a pipe. You take your grandpa, you take your grandma, you take Uncle Dan down to Pipeland. You say, go into the pipe. There's food down there. Go into the pipe. There's beer down there. Go into the pipe. There's weed and pizza down there. There's hookers down there. Go into the pipe, old people. And then they close the steel gate behind you. And the darkness sets in. But the Danes love it. And that's the key. You know, everybody says how happy Denmark is. And how we should all be like Denmark. And all I can say is the Danes love it. They really, really love it. So I'm going to read a short, brief article that was published on April the 5th. But it's hard to find reports of this in the Western papers. I wonder why. Headline, Hurricane Sweeps Across Siberia, Sparking Massive Wildfires and Casualties. Again, Saturday, April the 5th. A number of regions in Siberia have been struck by a hurricane which has intensified. I'm going to drink a little coffee here. Which has intensified natural wildfires. The first casualties have already been reported, according to Russian media. It is currently known that the strong winds have worsened the fires, causing flames to spread to homes. Wind gusts are reaching up to 30 meters per second. That's about, I think, 68 miles an hour. Meteorologists predict that the bad weather will last at least until tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. And you can read more about this. There's some video I have in the notes. You can take a look. It looks bad enough. It's hard to say if this is normal or not normal. It's like the derechos a couple years ago, those inland hurricanes, or like what happened in Appalachia last October. Or any of the fucking polar vortexes or heat domes or weird-ass clouds. I'm hard-pressed to find a time prior to 20 years ago where any of this was a thing. Any of it. And then all of a sudden, about a couple decades ago, it started changing. And I think you could make the reasonable argument, as I did in the last topic, that this is related to the strategies to maintain the air conditioner, which is probably what they focused on first. And I think Dane Wigington has talked about this. They focused on the air conditioner. They focused on the Arctic and the Antarctic. I don't think it's accidental that in 1956, they more or less limited who could go to the Antarctic. And as far as the Arctic goes, the Cold War did a great job of keeping that mostly off limits to normal people. So yeah, I think they probably have been doing this for a long time, but probably 20, 25 years ago, the focus shifted. It shifted to here. The United States, to give people that illusion that also allowed them to switch the narrative from global warming to climate change. And they could tell you, well, climate change will give you snow, you know, fucking snownadoes in New Orleans. We'll give you a fucking snowstorm in New Orleans. while it's raining in the Arctic Circle. And I gotta say, it's probably bullshit, right? This story is not showing up easily in any of the Western press. So using one aspect of Sovietology, you could say it's a little bit hidden, a little bit obscured. There might be something to this. Who knows? It's like the tariff thing. I think they're shutting down logistics preemptively because, frankly, we're about to enter a regime worldwide where what you got is what you got. If you got the rice, if you have the rice pudding, so to speak, if you got the potatoes, if you got the pigs, that's what you got. For now, nobody's going to be shipping the pig or the cow. And maybe it's true. Maybe Papa Blumpity Blump did get a shit ton of eggs from Turkey. But that, too, is probably a limited thing. And if it is best case, which is the collapse of the dollar empire, then yeah, it would also make sense that at some point the flow of shit sort of stops. And if you want to know, will that be reflected at the grocery store? I think they've been working out of warehouses for a lot of basic staples for probably the last 10 years. So they probably have maybe several more years of basic food to keep Americans fat, dumb, and happy. I would be willing to wager that. It's hard to say how much, only they would know. Which also means that they're not so much afraid of the running out of food as something else happening, or another way of putting it, maybe they do expect to run out of food, but by that point it won't matter. Who knows? I think we'll find out soon. Dan, you're just so fucking negative. I know, baby, because I love you. Do you have mice in your kitchen? Because I'm deadly serious. Do you have mice in your kitchen? Farmers have been killing mice for centuries. Farmers hate mice. Farmers despise the mice. Farmers will hunt the mice and flood his little home. There's a farmer trick. It's really slick. You set up a range fan. You set up a coffee can. You put in an acid grease. And then you just shove them mice down there. Slick-like. Prick-like, because you don't care. Then you mix salt with Vaseline. You mix it together and you shove it into the can. You wrap a banana in tin foil and you wrap it up there and you shove it up the can. Then you invest in a penny stock and make $1 billion to get your last chance. Your last chance to go to Silverwood, to go to Boulder Beach. It's a last chance sale because your penny stock nightmare is unfolding. You mix the Vaseline, you mix the salt, you shove the banana with the tinfoil up your can, and now you got mice in your can, mice in your kitchen. Do what the farmer does. Have a great rest of your Sunday.